There, Chaplain, glad to see you there. Good morning, sir.
Supervisor Oakland, would you lead us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we're grateful to be here today. We thank you for the holiday season, our opportunity to celebrate the risen Lord. And we know that the business of the county is important, and that's why people are here. We appreciate our government and the participation of our citizens. And Father, I just express gratitude for all who serve in various capacities in our county. Decisions need to be made, discussion needs to be had. But Father, I pray for calmness, I pray for peacefulness, I pray for integrity on the part of everyone, pray for honesty, that we might accomplish great things in this county. Truly, we're grateful for the direction you give us in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Thank you, Chaplain.
For a roll call, start with Supervisor
Valenzuela. Supervisor Hopp will be absent today.
Hopp is absent. Okay, so Supervisor Valenzuela.
Here.
Supervisor Chris.
Present.
Supervisor Ogren.
Present.
And Supervisor Kopsa.
Here. Item 4, presentation from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. The chair can extend that time to 5 minutes for appropriate circumstances. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. And I have one blue card. If anybody would like to address the board, fill out one of these blue cards over there for public comment. And Jay Martin is like the only one today that
wants to be
on the board, but that's all right.
Did I get more than 3 minutes?
No.
I only made
no,
it for two.
You
all
get three.
My name, for the record, I'm Jay Martin. I'm the owner of Siskiyou.news and other news-related social media sites in the digital world. Esteemed supervisors, I request the creation of an agenda item for your next meeting in 2 weeks. The issue? Our county's reliance on public notice laws drafted in 1884. These laws, while well-intentioned, are outdated in a digital age. With local newspapers dwindling or disappearing entirely, fulfilling legal notices via print-only publication is becoming both ineffective and costly. Did you know, for example, that Siskiyou.news receives far more daily traffic than our local websites? Your constituents are online, not solely relying on print media. In the handout that I gave you, there's some graphs, and I pulled some data from different websites, bigger websites, Siskiyou Daily News, Mount Shasta Herald, another larger website in Siskiyou County is Discover Siskiyou, and also the York County of Siskiyou website. I included some demographics of where your traffic's coming from and the numbers you're getting. I also pulled my numbers from Google, which does not match up to my analytics at all. Very interestingly, for Siskiyou Daily, by comparison, they're ranked 29,373. But their traffic is listed at 156 plus thousand. I'm listed at 27,000 in the ranking, 2,000 higher in the ranking, but Google has me throttled back to 15,000. My actual analytics on my website is well over 100,000. I've had 5,600 in 1 week just recently, and another 22,600 in another week. So it does not match up with Google. I have engineers looking at this. they're I'm for Rob and on other media, but that's beside the point. I want to help you, and that's something with the digital age and public notices. My website has already been designed and built for public notices and legal notices. It's a do-it-yourself. It can be done through the clerk's office, and it's locked. It can't be edited, can't be changed, can't be nothing. So that is something that is already built into the back end because I foresaw this coming. The other thing I have an adjudicated court decree from 1973. I urge us to consider a public notification system. Not only would this align with the current readership habits, but substantial taxpayer dollar savings and reduced printing costs. We have an obligation to keep our public informed effectively. Let's not claim the 19th century practices while in the 21st century. And I'll end it with that.
Thank you. Just an FYI, there is legislation going through the state capitol currently with regard to what you're bringing up. I brought this up at RCRC many times with regard to modernizing public noticing. The newspaper lobby is the one that has been behind keeping this where it's at. And it's
California Publishers Association. It's
a powerful lobby. But there is legislation that's trying to correct it towards the remaining newspapers' advantage. So anyway, if I get a bill number in that, I'll let you know what that is. But you might nose around in Sacramento to see whatever information is circulating there about that bill that's trying to come forward.
About 50% of the United States has actually gone to digital.
We're even digital, right? And Siski, so. Anna, you have somebody online for a public comment.
Caller ending in 9516, it's your turn to speak.
Good morning.
Hi, my name is Alice Rogers. I have attended the last two Board of Supervisors meetings and heard many people talk about both their feelings and observations of what is happening since the dam started coming out. I have empathy for what they are going through. Many asked you to declare a state of emergency to address their issues. There were other speakers who were experts in their fields and aware of this project, and they acknowledged what people were observing and explained much of it as expected consequences of the dams coming out. They explained that it was not a state of emergency and that things will get better. I know that we all saw the bridge collapse in Baltimore, and we've seen both drastic fire and weather events. Nobody has to make a case for an emergency. We know it when we see it. If this was an emergency, you would have seen it and declared it. As leaders, it is your job to take in information and use it to make the best decision. I heard two of you use the word error in your vote. The word error means to make a mistake or be wrong. You understood that you were making the wrong decision based on the facts. I heard speakers say they never thought the dams would come out. And even though some people said this was a done deal, they did not believe it. Some speakers had lived in the area for just a few years, yet they did not understand that this was very likely to happen. I understand that when you are faced with constituents asking you for action, you want to answer in a way that satisfies them. Yet giving them false hope accomplishes nothing. These dam removals were decided before this administration and even before the previous one. This is not about left or right. It's based on a decision that was made by all parties involved years ago. It is your responsibility to tell the truth, even if it is not what people want to hear. I applaud Supervisor Valenzuela for acknowledging what people were going through, but voting based on facts. The dam removal has been planned for years, yet delayed because people did not want to accept the decision. Declaring a state of emergency does not stop what is inevitable. It just makes us less uninformed. Thank you.
Anyone else online?
Showing no others online.
Anyone else in-house? Seeing none. We'll move on to item 5, consent agenda. I'd like to pull 5D.
If no more, I would move the balance.
The balance of the consent agenda. I have a motion to...
A second.
And a second.
Excuse me, Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye. There's no question with regard to this item on 5D. I just wanted to acknowledge for the media that Simpson College is trying to enact a airline pilot class program requiring equipment and actually adding it to their class schedule. It's a huge thing for the North State, job opportunity that I don't think we've seen in a very long time. I know COS here locally has provided for firefighting and the nursing program, but this was something that was even a new opportunity, and I'm glad to see that Simpson University is acknowledging the need for this type of education. So with that, I move to approve.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye. Okay, item 6A, CalOR Communications. Who's doing that? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to attend. My name is Rodney Wood, and I'm the CLEC manager for CalOR Communications. Most of you, I know that Supervisor Chris knows who we are. I'm not sure, and Supervisor Ogren, we got to meet a week or so ago, or 2 weeks ago. One of the things that the reason I asked to be on this agenda and be able to do a presentation to you today, we had a meeting a few weeks ago about a potential broadband service being brought through the center of the center of the county, and as part of an overreaching overbill, I'd say, that the various counties throughout the state of California supported. One of the things that I found in that meeting was that CalOR had not done a great job of educating you as the supervisors of what we've been doing over the last 20 plus years. We are based in Siskiyou County. We have our headquarters offices in Doris. We have another office in Tule Lake. And we do have 39 employees that are working out of those offices. We have a small office in Lake Shastina, and we have an office in Klamath Falls, Oregon as well. If you would, I'll go ahead and go into our presentation. Those of you who, I'm assuming you have all been to Doris and Tule Lake, They're very rural. We serve sometimes, a lot of providers talk about serving customers that are customers by the mile. A lot of times we're looking at our areas that are miles by the customer. Our farthest west customer is Deer Mountain Lodge. And then we serve through the Grass Lake area into Tennant and Tionesta and Bray and towns that a lot of people have probably never been to. And those are the areas that we serve. Do you want to go ahead and go to the next one? In our serving areas, these are the service types that we offer. We offer a fiber to the premise that's both home and business. We have a small DSL footprint in Shasta Valley, in the town, this community of Lake Shastina, and then down by Mount Shasta, what a lot of people call Abrams Lake. We also have a large DSL footprint in our ILEC, which is CalOR Telephone. And then we have a traditional fixed wireless network, which is, if you think of the cell phone towers that are around, we have towers like that that serve directly to end users in their homes. With the advance of technology, where the internet is gone, that technology is becoming a little bit obsolete. It's very hard for customers to be able to have the speeds that they're looking for. So we've recently developed a next-gen fixed wireless. We have, and I'll talk about this later in the presentation, but we have two towers that we have upgraded those to the next-gen wireless. We're going to be doing our Wairika tower this year, and we're also going to be doing that on our other towers that we have spread out throughout our communities. If you want to go ahead, go to the next one. This is a little bit of information about CalOR. We have our 39 employees that I mentioned and growing. We hire employees all the time.
Name for the benefit, ILEC is incumbent.
Is an incumbent local exchange carrier? Yes, sir. Right. Yeah.
We use a lot of acronyms in telecommunications. I don't think everyone gets it all.
So I'll define that so the listeners can understand that.
Because you're now going into other territories.
We have been for quite a while, and I'll actually explain that. So we're made up of two different companies. We have the incumbent local exchange carrier, which is Caliber Telephone. Think of your traditional telephone company that is providing internet service. So here in Myrica, that'd be like an AT&T.
Right. So when you say ILEC, you're talking Doris and Tulio.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And those are the numbers that we have in that area. So we have, you know, those are the 338 miles of fiber, 708 miles of copper, and then we serve 852 square miles. So in a CLEC, which I think is the best held secret that we've never told anybody about, we've been providing service. We've actually had fiber in the city of Wairika since 2003, started providing service to customers in 2007. We have 192 miles of fiber. The copper that we have is only the DSL customers that we serve today. And then we serve a square footage of 1,305 square miles. Those numbers there, you see we have 3,400 broadband customers today. That is made up of the customers inside the ILEC and the customers that we serve through Shasta Valley and then a few up in Cleveland Falls as well. And for those of you that don't know, CLEC is a competitive local exchange carrier. That means that we go into another LEC's area and compete directly with them. The other thing I'd like to mention is that CalOR, for the most part, CalOR Communications, the CLEC, has built all of this on our own dime. We have not asked for money from the public. We have not gotten funding to do that from, from various resources, state and federal. Do I go to the next slide? So these are some years, and again, the best kept secret. Wairika, we were 2003, we brought our fiber here. In 2007, we started providing fiber service to the end users in Weed 2018, in Mount Shasta 2017, and Dunsmuir 2019. This is gigabit service. We actually, in the coming year, we will be able to offer residential customers 5 gig by 5 gig, which is not being offered anywhere, I think, in our state. The list of our fiber builds in 2022, we did a Hidden Meadows neighborhood that previously only had access to dial-up or very, very restricted DSL. Because of the wooded area around it, various wireless programs, even Starlink, would not work there. We had two builds in Mount Shasta, around Lassen, and then through the center of Mount Shasta, we did two of those, Mount Shasta 1 and Mount Shasta 2 respectively, and with about 750 homes passed. We did East Lenox, which is over by the old Evans Transportation. We had a number of customers that requested service out of there, and we completed that. Last year, I'm proud to say, I grew up in the town of Gazelle. My folks own a cattle ranch there, and my mom's worked at the school for 41 years. We overbuilt that town last year. So, and when I say overbuilt, we built the interior town or within the city limits of Gazelle. And so previously, those people that lived there and in Grenada did not have a tremendous amount of opportunity or options for them to use internet. This year, we've announced publicly that we're overbuilding the city of Montague. We've begun that engineering. We have fiber on its way right now. Pole permits are complete, and we will be starting that build in the next 30 to 60 days and starting connecting customers 30 days after that. We also do in Merrill and Malin, Oregon, and while I cannot announce publicly during this forum, but we have more announcements coming for towns that are going to be overbuilt in Siskiyou County. If you want to go to the next slide. The other thing that I'm proud of, this is in the ILEC. CalOR was awarded CalOR Telephone was awarded $42 million to put fiber to all but 13 end users in our ILEC serving territory. And so that you're talking Doris, Tule Lake, Tiennesta, Bray, Tennant, they will all have access to gigabit fiber at an affordable cost within, our goal is to have that complete within 5 years. that is in the engineering process right now. Most of it's complete. The environmentals, for the most part, are done. And we will be kicking that off shortly.
Well, what do you mean by affordable?
Yeah.
So I can tell you today, our because it's public, it's on our website. A gig by gig service is $99. Our entry level service is $39. That's a 250 meg by 250 meg. It will do, for the most part, technically anything that most residential people want to use. This is the next gen fixed wireless that I was talking about. We've started upgrading. We have upgraded Lake Shastina Tower and Herd Peak. Those of you who don't know where Herd Peak is, it's one of the tallest peaks on the Cascade between the Cascades between Butte Valley and Shasta Valley. And so we've upgraded that tower as well. Our future upgrades that are coming are Wairika and Hammond Ranch. And then we are actively looking for new opportunities all the time. Go. And one of the things I would like, in our testing, we tested one location at 14 miles that tested out over 100 megs. So, and at 100 megs, that will do for most people what they need to do.
And do you need just, if the basic, is that 100 megs for like $39 a month? Is that what you're saying?
So on our fiber plan, the entry-level plan is $39.
And how many megs?
That's a 250 meg by 250
meg. And so when somebody orders that, do they actually receive 250, or is it kind of a
bouncing ball? Our stated goal is to ensure that all customers get 80% of what they're ordering at all times. However, we do run what's considered a non-blocking network to the end user. So we are actively monitoring every point of our network to ensure that our customers are getting what they're paying for. And I will say this in my own personal life, if I'm giving somebody money for something, I want to get what I'm paying for. And so that is our, as management at Cal Orb, we want to make sure that our customers are getting exactly what they're paying for.
So with regard, I'm sorry to rabbit trail
on you here,
but if people have a computer existing or mm-hmm. existing device for mm-hmm. Wi-Fi and to receive, your service through fiber, mm-hmm. does the speed diminish because of the type of equipment they have?
If they have equipment that's older, yes.
It will.
Okay. It can. So in fiber, we really don't know what fiber can do as far as speed, because it's light, it's glass, that's what fiber is. And so it's the equipment at the ends that determine how much speed they get. In the Wi-Fi world, most customers, that is one of the issues that people have, is they order incredibly fast internet service, and then it comes into a router or Wi-Fi and distributed into their home. And they get on Wi-Fi, and then that wireless signal is blocked for a variety of reasons. Maybe it's the distance. Maybe they have an older device. The Wi-Fi of today is far more advanced than even the Wi-Fi of 5 years ago. And so if they have an older device that's a laptop that's 10 years old, the fact that I can deliver them a gig service to their laptop doesn't do any good if their processor can't do that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And we try to educate customers as best we can about that. And with that, that's the end of my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. I believe that everybody has my contact information, and I have no problem allowing that contact information to be made public either. So.
Any questions, Supervisor Overy?
I've asked all my.
Well, I appreciate the supervisor's time.
Sure, no worries. So how does it work with Golden State Connect? Are you guys, is this, how do I say?
We would compete directly against
them. Okay, all right.
And, we have, as you did on that slide, we have millions of dollars invested. And so we would go directly, we would compete directly against them. and that's how that would work. It's highly unlikely that we would partake in their network. But we just don't need them. We just don't need them to do that. We already own one.
Yeah. Okay. That's Supervisor Chris.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Caliber is a major employer there in the Meat Valley area. Average salary? Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So we did a study last year of our employees just to make sure where we were. We obviously try to pay our employees as much as we can. We also offer all of our employees full benefits. I'll give you my own example for my family. For insurance, I pay $2 a year for it. That covers the entire family. I also have a very generous retirement plan. And then our wages are accordingly. Our average wage, if you look at what is most times considered a loaded wage, the average is significantly over $60,000 a year per employee. So obviously the Golden State Connect program could have an effect on that, because if we're successful in defending it, then it's no harm, no foul. But if we're not, then there obviously that could have an impact on those employees. And those of you that have been in the View Valley, we are one of the larger employers in that county, or in that part of the county.
So. It's one of those opportunities that kid graduates from high school, they're not able to go off to college, but these get trained and taught. And you have generations.
We have generations, yeah.
We have the company built there.
We have, and I'll mention his name, Bob Hensley worked for us, and his son works for us, and his grandson works for us. That's not uncommon. We have multiple generations that work for us. We have family that multiple family members work for the company. I'm proud to say that I work there, and I'm proud to say that it's a company that's doing things right, and they're based right here in Siskiyou County. I think it's to be awarded. The work ethic that I see from people from Siskiyou County is being applied every day in our company. So,
and of course, they also do things for the community as well.
One question, sure. Supervisor Brown,
I believe you're public to the trading company.
Caliber Communications is publicly traded through our parent company, LICT, correct?
Thank you. Anything else?
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Item 6B, Truly Lake Police.
That was quick.
Good morning.
If I had more time to sit there, I'd be nervous.
That's all right. Don't be nervous.
I'm not nervous.
Yeah, you know what it is when I get pulled over.
We just can't write tickets.
Well, depending on how this goes, I might give out some get-out-of-jail-free cards.
Oh, yeah. Don't get us in trouble.
Anyway. My name is Thomas Hoy. I'm the chief of police for the city of Tule Lake. I've been there about a year and 3 months now. There's a lot of good stuff going on at Tule Lake. We have a lot of motivation to get revitalized, so to speak. We are, as you guys know, we could be much further away and still be in Siskiyou County. So I do feel like sometimes we get kind of forgotten up there. And a lot of things within the city have fall into a point of disarray. I don't know how long it's been since you guys have been up there, but we have some buildings that are less than new, and two of which is the main reason why I'm here today with my good friend, my mayor, Tom Cordonair, and Chewy. He's our head of maintenance, roads and buildings, and does basically everything, sewer, water, all that good stuff. So you might be wondering why the chief of police is even talking about this kind of stuff. It's because I wear a lot of hats. I didn't realize how many hats I was going to wear when I took this job at such a small town. There's a lot of things that need to go on. But my main goal for this job is the safety of our citizens, especially the children and the elderly. That's what I really help try to focus on. We have a couple of buildings right now that have been in discussion since way before I became the chief of police there. But they are, within the last few months, coming to a point of an emergency. I have some photos here, and I have a letter. I don't know how many of you guys got the letter. I know I sent it to several different people, but the letter basically states there's two buildings I'll give you a quick rehash so I don't take up too much of your time. Our old bowling alley, and there's a place called the Mallard. You guys may have seen that. It was actually famous. It was on World's Dirtiest Jobs, one of those shows. It was pretty cool. Kind of put us on the map. There was they would take all the processed birds that were hunted in the Tule Lake area, which is what we used to be famous for, and they would pluck them and then make pillows and all kinds of things. So it went up on the TV show, which was really cool, and it's employed at one time or another 90% of our population. Everybody I talk to says, oh yeah, I used to work there. Well, now it's falling down, as well as the bowling alley. We have this. The first pictures you're seeing here are the bowling alley. As you can tell, we put temporary fencing up because we could tell it was getting pretty bad. The construction of the bowling alley, we'll start with that one, is brick, main supporting walls. It's got a large domed roof that was supported with trusses. And the trusses are failing, and the dome is now collapsing, which of course is putting outward pressure on those big brick main supporting walls that are designed for straight down pressure. They're spreading out. Literally, while we were standing there looking at it a couple weeks ago, if you bounce around on your picture there, right there, we were standing right outside that fence discussing this 100-year-old building and talk about timing. We're standing there looking up at it thinking, how are we going to make this safe? We need to figure out how we're going to get this taken down. And it literally collapsed as we were standing there. We all had to scatter and step away because about half of the bricks and the rubble that you see there hit the concrete. If it wasn't for the temporary fencing, if it wasn't for Chewy's foresight, there could have been kids walking down that sidewalk at the time this happened. And it's not going to stop. It's just going to continue to spread because every time one of the trusses gives, it just moves 10 feet forward, and now that's doing the same thing. Yeah, you can see all that. You can't even see the dome of the roof anymore. It's completely collapsed. And if you go to the inside photo, that's what it looks like on the inside. Unfortunately, both these buildings, both the bowling alley and the Mallard, are privately owned buildings. There's an individual that we do have contact with that owns the bowling alley, but he has no money, he has no resources, he has no ability to help take care of his own building. The Mallard, which you'll see pictures of that in a minute, is similar, except that particular owner does not even live within our city and has not responded to anything for over a year, year and a half, I think it is. Zero response from her, and she just really doesn't care. If you can look at the front wall of that building right there. Do you have a laser pointer up here? Sometimes? Okay. You can see the front wall, how it's sagging on the inside. It's the interior of this building is literally pulling itself apart. This is the way our building inspector explained it to me. All the wood, all the trusses, all the support beams on the inside are collapsing. They're dilapidated. And you can see that's a picture of the outer wall. The west-facing wall was falling in. The south-facing wall, which is what you're seeing here, is coming out. It's a two-story building. It's a very tall two-story building. You can see the picture down there. The entire thing is ready to come down. Again, the city has had to spend the money to get fencing to put it up there. But it's impossible to keep that secure. We have homeless people that are coming and going from this building daily. We have kids walking by it. Now, especially with the springtime coming up, there is, you can see the cracks on the lower. That whole thing is going to implode on one side and explode out the other side. And my biggest fear is that either a child or a homeless person or somebody is going to be rooting around in there at the time of this collapse, and it's going to cost somebody their lives. There's a picture of the inside. As you can see, the entire infrastructure is gone. It's just falling apart. There's a ton of stuff in there which lures in kids and people that are looking for a quick snatch or a place to sleep, which we've run a lot of people out of there doing that as well. We have already called and tried all different avenues. Chewy and I have even discussed renting an excavator ourselves. We both have heavy equipment operating experience. Knocking this thing down at least to make it safe, and then we could just fence off the pile. But the state of California says you can't do that until you test for asbestos and lead paint. So, yes, we understand the risk of asbestos and lead paint, but at what point does the risk of this building physically falling on somebody outweigh the risk of, the future concern of disposal costs? We as a city are tapped out. We don't have the ability, we don't have the funding, we don't have the Yeah, we just flat don't have the ability or the means to dispose of this big of a problem. And especially when they're not even owned by us. We are in the process, and maybe Tom can answer more questions about that, but both buildings are in the process of becoming our responsibility, whether it be due to back taxes or just the owner's inability to keep public safety from diminishing. So we are literally coming to you guys with looking for any kind of help or any kind of instruction or ideas of how you think we can proceed with this. I think a lot of it might come just from having the horsepower of your guys' positions to get the state of California, hey, this is a big problem. We need to fast forward this testing for lead paint and asbestos because they're saying it's about 6 months. We'll figure we might be able to get to it by then. So all it's going to take is a stiff breeze, as you can tell, and this is going to wind up landing on somebody's head. What else was I going to say? Tom, is there anything else? Did I cover it all?
Yeah, well, about the subsoil.
What's causing it, I guess.
That's another thing. I'm glad he brought that up, because these are the two of the buildings that we have in our city that are the biggest problem, because it's immediate, and you can tell it's about to fall. But every single heavy, older building in our city is experiencing a sinking process. And there's been a lot of research done on it, and a lot more needs to continue to be done. But the water table in Tule Lake, I don't know if you guys have spent much time in Tule Lake, but if you're standing on the sidewalk and a truck drives by, you feel the whole ground shake. We are literally built on a lake. It has been a lake for millions of years. And up until the last 5 to 6 years, the water table, should we confirm if I'm wrong, has been about 2 feet down?
The floor now, when I grew up in...
And just so you know, the board has been out there the last couple of years having a special meeting out there.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I'm Jose Perez, known by Chuy. I've lived in Tule for 44 years. Growing up as a kid, our water table was about 2 feet down. Now it's about 8 or 10 feet, and it's constantly going down more.
And we learned that in our last board meeting out there. But
yeah.
Okay. You guys are familiar with that.
Because you used to be able to dig a couple feet down to be water. Now it's
about 10, 12 feet.
And the way it was explained to me to make it make sense to my dumb cop brain is, when you're walking on the beach, when the waves are coming in and out, the sand is hard as a rock, and it supports your weight. You step 10 feet up away from the ocean, and you're in the dry sand, and you sink up to your ankles. And that's exactly what's happening with our buildings. Even Mike and Wanda's, the most famous landmark restaurant of our city, if you sit in the seats that are along the load-bearing wall, all the tables are leaning like this, and things will literally slide or roll across the table because that load-bearing wall is sinking into the ground, taking the floor with it. The floorboards are all buckling up, and that's just one example. We had to, how much money do we spend on the high school doors? The doors of the high school, because there's a load-bearing wall on one side of the main doors where all the students come and go, we're getting to where they were scraping the ground on one side, and there was a 2-inch gap on the other side, because everything is, in fact, sinking.
And then this summer, we kind of fixed a couple of streets, because it dropped about maybe 4 to 6 inches, about 200 yards. On a couple of spots there.
So with regard to the sinking, I think it was, a year, maybe 2 years ago now, that we got reports on the high school and what was happening there, mainly due to dewatering the project, I think, is in the refuge. Is that?
That's what's considered to be the source of the issue, is the fact that we're not getting any water in Tule Lake anymore. Mm-hmm. This year is looking really good. I'm hoping that this slows the process down. At least I've seen there's more water there than I've seen in years. And I'm born and raised Pino, Doris, Tule Lake. So it's looking good for this year, but if they continue to cut it off like they've been doing, and a lot of it has to do with the dam removals, and you guys are already having to deal with that. The water table is just changing. A lot of it has to do with irrigation. The water is still down there underground, but the way it was explained to me is we're no longer... because a lot of farmers lost irrigation rights, they're not pumping it up and spreading it out on the surface. It's staying down there, and the ground is becoming hard or soft in this case. And underwater caverns that are now dry are starting to collapse, which makes low spots. I don't know if you guys have driven out East-West Road towards Hill Road out of the city, but about 3/4 of the way to between Hill Road and Dooley Lake, there's like a ramp where the entire valley has literally settled about 2 feet, and there's about a 2 foot ramp that they keep having to repair the asphalt. It's because everything is literally sinking, and it's causing us problems that we cannot continue to bear.
So has the county OES been out there? I think yes.
Yes, they have.
Oh, there he is. I'm sorry. Mr. Shinoni, I was thinking you weren't here. I'm sorry. Do you want to add to this dialogue a bit?
Just to add,
go ahead, Supervisor.
We had a special meeting out there about a year ago now. She was there, Shinoni and Ms. Nielsen, and then Supervisor Jerry Burns from Rock County was there as well. Talking about the soil compaction.
Oh, okay.
And those things. And remember, Shinoni was connected with the folks that came out.
Okay. Please.
Brian Shinoni, Director of Emergency Services. Board Chair, Board Supervisor. So, yes, we are well aware of this. I've been in contact with Police Chief and a few of the other folks up there. Very concerned, 100% concerning. Three major hurdles that we're going to see. He has said it once before. Privately owned property, state doesn't want to touch it. Funds have not exceeded multiple capacities, so funds have not exceeded Dooley Lake or Siskiyou County. And then the other one is DTSC, which is Department of Toxic Contamination. So they're the ones that come to do our normal cleanups during fires. We spoke with them. They are aware of the asbestos and some of the other concerns with the buildings collapsing or coming down or needing to come down. And they keep pushing us towards a grant. One of the grants would be, Investigating Site Contamination Program, so it's the ISCP. I pushed that as well. As far as state funding, as of right now, the state is basically said no. One of the things that they're concerned with is the fact that it is private property, so they can't abate private property at a state level onto a local jurisdiction. So with that, we understand that there's a concern. We try to go about the critical infrastructure, whether if the building came down, it would block fire access or police access. Looking at maps, looking at Google Maps, along with the state, it's just it wasn't there. It was a far reach. And then looking at the concern for us was the public safety concern for children and those who are going in and out. The response was more gates, more fences. So we are in really that in between, and I know that there's no good answer, and I wish I had awesome answers and awesome reports out for you, but I really don't. And then that's one of the concerns that we have. The building, as we saw, is literally falling around us. And then what we see is, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? So that's where our concern is. If you have any questions, we're happy to answer those.
So I'm going to come your way just real quickly. So with regard to, it's not just essentially these two buildings, although at least from my perception is these are the two that are at least showing signs of collapsing. But with the high school issue there, I mean, I've heard reports of even homes that foundations are cracking.
Absolutely.
At least from my perspective, it seems like it's a community-wide thing due to dewatering. It's not isolated in that sense that the state is describing back to us. Is that fair to say?
Right. I could have said it better. So the dewatering part is certainly our concern across the View Valley and Dooley Lake area. That is, for us, a bigger picture, right? That's what we need to look at is how do we want to proceed as Siskiyou County for the whole valley? And then we talked about this at the board meeting, which I think was really important, and I believe we're having another?
Yes. 30th.
Okay. So on the 30th, I'm sure this will be another topic that we want to talk about, but moving that forward, what does that look like for dewatering for the whole valley and buildings that are crumbling and buildings that are coming down? I did send, I hope you received, four different grants and four different loan projects. And that do fit really nicely into that. And we would certainly help co-author on that and support as needed. Granted, we know that that's not an immediate fix. What we would like to see is those buildings on the ground. But
with regard to Senator Daley or Assemblywoman Daley, have the offices been contacted?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Chris?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To brag on the city of Teal Lake, the city of Teal Lake provides water to outside areas, outside of the city, with piping. We recently had a meeting that was for the Meals on Wheels program there in Teal Lake. The city of Teal Lake tried its best to step in for PSA 2 grants and those sorts of things for Meals on Wheels. Also, I know that the police there don't just stay within the city boundary and just patrol the city boundary, but if someone passes away or there's an emergency, they cover the outside areas outside of Teal Lake as well. The refuge over there, I don't think we'll include it on the tour, but it's something to note. The National Fish and Wildlife Service Refuge headquarters was literally cracking. It was settling where it was at, next to on Hill Road. So they built they were building a new one, and the new one is very expensive. Has floating, has all this sort of stuff in there you need to have for what they're facing. So the federal government has actually had to shell out quite a bit of money for this old refuge site because of the old dewatering of the area. Unfortunately, we don't have taps into that large federal funding, but we've had that there. Some good news is that the Lost River used to, so you have the Lost River Basin, Clear Lake, and Tula Lake, it was a closed basin. The Lost River did not traditionally flow into the Klamath River, but it used to be diverted that direction in order to keep things from getting too wet in the Tula Lake area. The federal government recognizes that the Lost River water is not destined for the Klamath River, and so the Tula Lake Irrigation District has been dedicating that Lost River water into the actual Tula Lake and the refuge down there. And so that's adding quite a bit. They were able to pre-plumb a lot of the water systems down there this year because of taking that Lost River water from, I think, diversion Anderson Rose Dam down there to get that area. And that'll help a lot with compaction and those sorts of factors. I recently went down to Sacramento and met with the Department of Agriculture down there, the California Department of Agriculture, because we're worried that the state will look at this and say, subsidence. We're worried they'll say subsidence when it's actually a soil compaction from the topper layers. And they'll say, okay, we got to shut off wells to stop this from going down. That would be the worst possible thing we could do. The worst possible thing we could do is we have to have the water plumbed back up to be rehydrated. And then to add, Mr. Shinoni, kind of looking at you, I know that one of your strengths and your team's strengths are grants. And so just looking at you, numbers, I know that's the tough part is, we're taking, how do I put it, we're like taking a car into the mechanic, and you're listening for the dings and stuff. How are we doing? Do you have all the numbers that you need and stuff? Like, what numbers do you need to show, to help make the case for the grants and those sorts of things?
Right. Great question. So really the questions that we need answered is cost across the board. So how much does it cost in overtime? What does it cost for mitigation of this? What does it cost for the fact that we need to have this building removed? And what does that look like? Has all resources been expended? Have we looked at every possible expenditure that has taken on? And then from that position, then we can start to write and develop and build a picture. So one of the hardest things for any disaster is to say it's going to cost this much, because we don't know. What we need to see is it's going to cost this much, and this is the continuing cost, and then that is what we can write off of. So that would be, for us, our biggest challenge right now is not having all of the numbers that we need, and kind of moving that, I'm going to pitch it a little bit over to you, but that's one of those that
do we have those
types of things? If it's an overtime cost, it's if it was extra lunches. I mean, it the more cost that we can get, the better, because I need to show that picture that we have expended all resources.
For local jurisdiction, do you like a checklist or a form that says?
We can certainly find one. Yeah, we can build a checklist on that.
So So I guess the silver lining is likely Lost River is always going to come down to Two Lakes so far, it looks like. And then I can't remember the name of the hotel, the building that was taken down.
The Clyde.
The city was proactive in taking the Clyde down. Imagine what we'd be dealing with if that was on Main Street. I mean, the city's proactiveness in going after that.
Yeah, we took the Clyde down, and it cost about almost $800,000 to take down.
Wow. Yeah.
So, we don't have that kind
and
of
And that's money. Hauling it off. And
yes, hauling it off and everything. And it was hauled off to Anderson, California, because it had asbestos in it.
Okay.
That was the main cost on that.
I think from McKenna's perspective for Sigma, flood control district, the main thing is to show it's the compaction of the top layer so that the state doesn't come in and make do the worst thing possible to show off those wells.
One point I wanted to make real quick, and I told myself on the way here that I didn't want to get too far into the soil issue and the bigger issue because I don't want to take the focus away from these two. I mean, it's obviously important for the city in the long term to discuss what we're talking about, but getting these two gone is, I mean, it could be tomorrow when some kid decides to park his bike and sneak under that fence and do something and then wind up wearing that building on. That's the part that keeps me up at night, and that's why I'm coming to you guys. And again, I don't know if it's Brian, you might be able to answer that question. Why does it take so long to get lead and asbestos testing done? Why does it take so long to do these things? And at what point are we going to put the safety of the citizens ahead of that? And we're just going to go in an excavator and knock it down, and we're going to probably get fined and yelled at by the state and everybody else for doing it. But I'd rather do that than, you know, have to go dig somebody out of their hole.
So what happens, I guess, if it just collapses on its own without any testing? I don't know if you guys can give me an answer.
It's not
going to
pollute it any worse than it's going to do if we knock it down. That's my point.
Well,
I'm
with you.
Huh? So that's probably the easiest solution.
Yeah, but that would be, you know, potentially if it all went well, right, with nobody in it. Is there, I guess, would it be prudent on this board to at least have some type of letter drafted to our state representatives with regard to the urgency of getting potentially an exemption from the testing so that this thing can be at least put on the ground to eliminate most of the danger?
Certainly, that's certainly a valid request. And we have, it's not really a state of emergency, but it is an urgency item that needs to be pushed forward. Again, I need some costs on that. And then the other big one is you need to tread lightly with where we're at in subsidence and
right. Everything
else, right? So that's a concern that we have moving forward is what, I want the buildings gone just like they want the buildings gone, but when we look at this as a big picture, why are the buildings coming down? What is the state gonna say on that? How does that look on our overall piece? That's gonna be our challenge, and that's gonna be where we really, really need to walk that fine line.
Maybe you can check with the city of North Shasta, they have a hazardous site now that they're dealing with, that going through the process.
100%.
I can't speak to what goes on other than, but I can tell you, and this goes here locally, police chief, is that there's lack of capacity across the board. I mean, you're not the only one dealing with this throughout the state of California, particularly small rural towns. When I talk to my rural peers, they've got those incidences littered, unfortunately. I think it's how we get our noise to the top where we get something done. And I do think we need to work with our state legislators, local, to get involved.
Supervisor Ogren, you're next.
I keep pointing because it's like, good point, don't go ahead. My first question is, do these private owners have insurance?
That's not been any avenue that we've been able to, no, they do not, I guess is the short answer.
Okay, so if they fall, there's no insurance through the private owners that can go back and take care of any of this.
Correct. In fact, we can't even get a hold of, like I said, more than a year, all of our letters have been returned to sender for everything on the Mallard. And I believe this individual bought this thing sight unseen, thought it was, oh, the nice big old building, it's really cheap, I found it online, now I own it. And then realized, this is a disaster, I'm going back to wherever I'm from and I'm going to leave this in their lap. And I, one of the things I also should specify or clarify, this building is the bigger, scarier one, but at least it's more remote. It's on vacant lots on both sides. The bowling alley, which is actively falling down and actively dumping debris on the sidewalks, is right downtown. We've had to block off the street at that point, so obviously we've limited access to the neighborhoods, and the kids walk to and from school every day past the bowling alley. It is the more dangerous due to location, but this one is the bigger bigger mess when it does go. So just to add that to you guys' wealth of knowledge there.
Okay, so I guess those two buildings and the city have a real priority. I get the grant funding, I get that you need numbers, but the public safety issue is imminent, and that information needs to get out. I mean, we really need to make sure that that's an important and really imminent information that needs to go straight to the state, and we need to look at that. We need to paint that picture. But we also, in all of this, need to look at the bigger problem, which is the soil compaction and this water issue that's causing all of the other problems, not only in the city, but throughout the basin. And I really think that along with the city of Tule Lakes issues and the fact that you don't have the capacity to take care of the high school, and even if we did, these problems that are happening right now that you're faced with, that we're faced with, if we fix them, the problem isn't going to go away.
That's correct.
And we're going to continue to have more problems. Just because we fix the doors in the high school and the road on Hill Road, it's going to happen again if we don't fix the bigger problem. So we need to address the issue. So we're going to keep throwing money after money after money, going for grants, doing all this stuff. It's not going to fix the problem. So I think we need to come up not only with a way to deal with the issues that we're faced with right now, this, public safety, but we also need to come up with a plan to fix a bigger issue, which we keep trying to do. But we need to bring it to the Dallies, to Malfa, and straight up. So we need to put our heads together. Okay.
Has the city council done any type of action on this with regard to pushing it up the ladder?
Yes.
Well, political ladder?
Yeah. Tom Cordonier. We went in about 6-8 months ago. We made a state of emergency, the whole city, because of the water settling and the water problems. But the city administrator, she's been pushing for grants and everything and just hasn't got them. And she's written letters also. We've had her write letters, but nothing's happening right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yes, we also have their draft as well. This is the what I pushed to the state. It was promptly returned and said, I need this, this, and this before this can be anything. So, again, we are getting that roadblock on that part of it.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Chris.
Yeah, I just have a few things to add. I'm going to recognize for the Tule Lakes folks coming over, it's a 4-hour round trip for a 10-minute presentation, so I appreciate that.
It's important.
It is. I'm going to dive. I agree with Supervisor Ogre in the big picture and the soil. And then the Supervisor Valenzuela brought up an issue having put everything in North Shasta as well. There's their building.
Houses, the old hospital, it's asbestos related, so it's just covered with plastic. Right now it's in Palimbo land because it was private ownership, and right now what do we do? Yeah.
Same thing.
And as you can imagine, and they would allude to it, it's an expensive endeavor to take hazardous waste to Anderson or wherever they take to the site. Yeah.
And then the last part of that, Mr. Shinoni or Mr. Pond, this is kind of anti-client to come over without an exact solution. I'm sure you'd like to come over and have the board say, we're going to do X, Y, Z. We've got it solved. Thank you. The whole world solved. If you're available, would you guys be able to like talk in the hallway afterwards or come in offices right after this meeting, you know, to fill in any gaps that we cover up here as a board?
Yes, absolutely.
If you're available after the meeting.
So, yeah. Absolutely. So the one thing I do want to state is this has been on our radar and been on our board. Those of you that have been to my office, you know we have a whiteboard with all the ongoings. In fact, I actually have now two whiteboards of all the ongoings in our county. This is a priority. This is something that we are working on. But one of the things there is stovepipe going to the state, and that is a challenge. So our team works on this just as much as we work on everything else, looking at how and what we can do to kind of think outside the box on this and build a better picture that we can push and see what else is out there. So we also, there are a couple loans that are DTSC loans that are really worth exploring. Again, that doesn't do anything now, but it is something that we're trying to push forward. The other really important part is our code enforcement for the county has 100% support of this, and they will do whatever is needed just to reach out from Tule Lake to help them with the enforcement of it. So, know that we're behind you on this 100%, and it's government. It just doesn't move fast. But we're trying. So.
And then follow up. Yeah, I just want to make sure you guys can connect afterwards and stuff, if it drove over. And then the Sewers Organ brought up, one of the solutions advocated by the tri-counties and by the, is the pass-through. So it's in the water from Klamath into Tula Lake, pass it underneath that mountain, Sheepy Ridge, into the refuge, clean it up, clean up the phosphorus, and then ship it out to the Klamath River. The cool thing about that is this year they were able to catch more water and rehydrate that system. So if we advocate for that to continue year after year, it's not going to be a sponge out there drying it all up with the water because it's already hydrated. And that water could be used to keep that water, that ground hydrated for future, and slow the thing up in the cloud for they need for salmon and whatnot. One of the long-term solutions that Source Oregon is looking towards.
So for the short-term solution, I would support, I don't know if it would be you, Mr. Shinoni, a draft or the CAO's office draft a letter from this board with regard to supporting their declaration for the city of Tule Lake, and it's specifically though targeting at least these two buildings and getting on a fast track so that at least it can be brought down to eliminate one of the dangers, immediate dangers. Obviously there's more to come with that, because I think that's your request today is with regard to at least these two buildings. I understand there's a longer term outlook on this, but I'm supportive of at least getting that off the ground. Sure. If that's where the board would like to go.
That was our main goal, was just to get the information out, and I really appreciate you guys listening. We didn't drive down here expecting you to be like, here's a check.
We're waiting for that too.
That's not what we were looking for. I just appreciate you guys having taken the time and absorbing it. Also, I want to point out, Brian has a counterpart at Tule Lake now. We have last year we got Joey Fiscal is a chief resiliency officer. It was a big state grant that we got, and he's been working with Brian also, and meeting with Brian. And his main job is mitigation of hazardous situations, everything from train derailments to tornadoes to this kind of stuff. So we have everything in place to do it, but it's not happening fast enough to where these buildings aren't going to hurt somebody.
Right. So Ms. Davis, done. We're all in agreement on that?
Yes.
That's okay. Natalie, are we okay? All right, just want to make sure that you didn't need a motion or something, but I don't think it has an action on it. So
we'll be out there on the 30th, so I'll make sure I drive by.
Please come up. We have great food options. I'd love to show you anybody around that wants to come up, and I can take you to these different buildings and show you the settling that's going on. It's pretty obvious.
Ms. Nielsen, what's on that tour that day that we're going to be taking? Is any of this on that tour? I know it may not be, but I'm just trying to pinpoint.
Good morning, Board. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. Visiting these buildings is not a specific stop on the tour. However, we will be going by the city of Tule Lake as part of our tour, and we can certainly loop in.
We do a drive-by, in other words?
100%. We can do a drive-by.
Police chief and
all you go in front of the building.
Yeah.
I'll coordinate with Chief Hoy on the April 30th meeting.
Is that where we're having lunch that day?
No, it is not where we are having lunch, but we are certainly driving near it. So we will set up lunch right there.
All
right.
So. Yeah, I was going to say. That'll
get
exposure, right?
Yes.
All
right. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. We appreciate the presentation.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Take a break before the next.
Yeah, you ready? We'll take five.